welcome everyone to Talking Shop Down Under. This is your host, Richard Banks, and I have with me for this particular episode the amazing and affable Sam Saffron. Sam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi.
I was going to come up with a few more, you know, descriptive words for you, but I gave up. I think just saying Sam Saffron's enough and everyone's going,
I don't think so.
We can talk it up a bit.
Yeah, I guess.
So for those who didn't have that moment where, you know, the sun broke through the clouds and at the mention of your name and everything just lit up and the world was a happier place, do you want to just introduce yourself so they know some of the cool things you do and what you're involved in?
Yeah, I work for Stack Overflow. It's a Q&A website for programmers.
I think we've heard of that.
Hope so. I've been working at Stack Overflow for about a year now. I got started working there with Data Explorer, which is a website that allows you to write queries online on this page and run them against the Stack Overflow public data dump.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first project for the first 2 or 3 months that I was working there. And then I joined the core team and started working on the core platform, the core Q&A engine.
So you're actually employed, obviously?
Yeah, I'm employed full-time by Stack Exchange Incorporated. That's the umbrella company, I guess, for Stack Overflow and all of the other websites that we run that are using the engine.
There's how many different sites now?
Close to 40, probably, maybe more.
The most famous one being the cooking one, obviously.
The most famous non-Stack Overflow one would be, I guess, Super User, maybe the gaming one.
Yep.
That's pretty popular. The photography one's pretty popular and the cooking one's pretty popular.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, so many of them now. It's hard to keep track.
And there's more popping up every day, obviously.
Yeah.
So what are you involved in then from a day-to-day point of view within the team, if you can talk about it?
Within the team, we're constantly on chat. There's a portion of the job is putting out fires because there are constantly fires when you've got this scale of traffic. Then we each have our own individual projects that we work on and it changes. So 1 week I could be working on performance and another week building a feature for the website.
Mm-hmm.
In general, we work in very, very small groups on projects. So it'll be max of 3 people working on one thing at a time. And, you know, it's just a grab bag. Any day could be anything. Recently, for the last few months, we've been doing a fair amount of performance work. We were hitting some scaling bottlenecks, which it's pretty interesting because we upgraded the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were getting all of these scaling issues and it wasn't making sense that, you know, after you've gone from a setup that had 4 web servers at the front to 10, suddenly you'd get all of these extra scaling problems, but we did. And a lot of it was software. Most of the issues that we faced in the last few months have been software. The hardware's at the moment, as it stands, Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange and all the websites could probably run on 1 or 2 web servers the way we've got it down to now. And 1 very bulky DB server.
As is always the case with these things, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's MongoDB and the promise of the NoSQL, et cetera, but we're pretty happy with the YesSQL solution. It's working well for us.
The YesSQL one. I like that. It's good. Out of curiosity, what were some of the performance issues? This is, threading or something and synchronous things blocking each other?
Well, the majority of the issues that we had that were causing what we were seeing is occasionally CPUs would just spike at 100% on web servers. And that's when, like, the big performance drive started. It would just happen out of the blue one day, 100% CPU on 10 web servers, go figure. And that's probably the biggest nightmare any dev can get because, you know, seeing 100% CPU isn't something that really helps you much. luckily, I wrote another tool that's on my blog called CPU Analyzer that attaches to the running instance of W3WP and grab stack traces. So it's like a lightweight sampling profiler. And using that tool, we discovered a lot of the reasons why we were getting these runaway CPUs. And the big analysis that came back from that, which ties into Dapper, was that we were seeing a lot of dynamic methods being constructed. And that's where, when we'd see these big spikes, we'd see like massive amounts of dynamic methods being constructed from link to SQL.
Okay, it's interesting. And it just a link to SQL issue, and it was biting, basically.
It's not an issue that you'd notice unless you've got scale, like a large amount of scale going through your web servers. Keep in mind, at the moment, we see probably 10 million page constructions on our servers a day. So that would be a million per server, which is a fair number.
That's not too bad.
And most of these pages are constructed dynamically, which is, the big problem is that, you know, each one of these pages that you're constructing dynamically is going to be running a whole ton of queries.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't afford to have a large amount of ORM overhead when you do that. We was noticing that our DB wasn't choking too much. We did a lot of work on the DB front as well, optimizing queries and scaling out queries, which is an interesting show all of itself of how, you know, we took some stuff that we had in full text and we fanned it out into Lucene on all of our web tier, which freed up a whole bunch of resources on SQL Server, and did a bunch of stuff like that to scale out. But except for that, even at our worst, SQL Server was able to handle and cope with the load that we were chucking at it. It was the web servers that were having trouble materializing results from the SQL Server and turning them into .NET objects.
Okay, and that's where obviously the Dapper project came from.
Yeah, and that's where it came from. Basically, I was looking at the patterns that we were following internally in our code, and I saw that it was just as simple to write straight-out SQL queries to work around all of those hotspots. But the trouble was that the boilerplate code that you had to put around those little bits of SQL that you littered through your code was huge. And if anybody has seen SQL client code, it gets pretty messy.
The classic ADO.NET stuff.
Yeah, classic ADO.NET, dbNull.value versus null. And did you now do column number 11 or is it column number 12? And so on. So you get very, very fragile code that is hard to maintain and nobody wants to look at when you code that way. So what I looked for in Dapper was a pattern that allows you to kind of get rid of all of that boilerplate code and replace it with something very simple. So that's where it was born from. It was give me a very, very simple way to run a query method and turn it into a POCO, a plain old CLI object.
So some people would have potentially gone the other way and said, well, if we're having issues with link to SQL and performance with that, then maybe link to SQL is not the answer. We should go look at Nhibernate or Entity Framework and then deal with caching queries and so forth and second-level caches and all that sort of thing as a possibility. It's interesting you went the other direction. Was there?
No, it's not really true that we went the other. We use Redis internally. So we've already got multiple levels of caching. We've got output caches for anonymous requests, and we've got Redis caching chunks of the page and queries. And then on top of that, we have a local cache that each web server will just use in memory. So we've got a pretty comprehensive caching strategy, but even with all of our caching strategy, we were still hitting this bottleneck where it was too much ORM overhead for all of the areas that aren't cached. You have to keep in mind that for Stack Overflow, there are a whole bunch of things that cannot be cached that are per user. And every user that accesses a website, for example...
These are things like the tags they're interested in and so forth.
Yeah, or for example, they get a different front page. Every user that visits Stack Overflow will get a different front page unless they're anonymous. And as they're visiting, as they're going through the website, there are a whole bunch of things that are heavily dependent on the user they are. Chunks of the header and chunks are user specific, and whole bits of the website are question pages, for example. You know, there's a limit. We've got almost 2 million questions on Stack Overflow at the moment.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there's a limit of the amount that you can cache as well. Like, it's going to drop out of the cache at some point.
What, you don't keep all 2 million questions and all the answers in memory?
As HTML. And they're very dynamic as well. Like, the content on Stack Overflow that's being viewed is very, very dynamic. It's constantly changing. People are constantly adding comments. And, you know, you add one comment to a question and suddenly you can't cache the whole chunk of HTML anymore.
Well, and also, so you do the notification to people that other people have commented, added a comment while they're answering, for instance, and things like that as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Ajax calls going on as well all the time.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Dapper, just how it works from a usage point of view.
Okay. So, yeah, just before we talk about Dapper, so Dapper is I came up with the concept, but Mark Gravel, who's number two on Stack Overflow, helped me a lot with a lot of the IL work because he's pretty much – he breathes IL. That's what he does on the weekend. He writes IL. So he's one of those people. So I was very lucky to have him on that project, on the Dapper project, and he definitely helps a lot there. And basically owns a lot of the IL conversions that we do internally. So Dapper is a very, very, very simple micro ORM. It's about 1,500 lines long, so long enough that you can look at the code and figure out what bits of it are doing, and that you don't have to remember a lot of things. For example, Dapper, all you need to know is how many methods, like three methods, to know how to use it. So you need to know of a query method, an execute method, and an execute multiple method, and a query multiple method.
Mm-hmm.
And the query method you use when you want to get enumerable of POCOs back, you use execute basically as execute command, which is the old execute command that you probably used if you just want to run SQL and get the number of rows that were affected.
Yep.
And the last one is query multiple, which you use when you want to execute a batch of SQL and get back a bunch of results.
Okay, so you effectively just turn that into a single statement or a single round trip to the server.
Yes. So if you're grabbing your customers and your orders and you just want to do that in one go, you can, you know, select star from customers, select star from orders, and then using query multiple, grab the customers first and then the orders second or whatever. So that's Dapper at the core. It's those three methods, but there's a lot going on there on top of it, a lot of overloads, support for stored procedures, pretty deep support for stored procedures. So, you know, output parameters and return values and every other little fancy option that you want. Up to even if you wanted to do table valued parameters, you'd be able to implement an interface and get that. Additionally, execute will support a form of batching. So you can insert like 1,000 customers in one call. So you can pass in an enumerable customer.
And just persist the whole list effectively.
And yeah, persist the whole list effectively reusing commands, because when you're running a lot of commands, it makes sense to reuse that.
Mm-hmm.
On query, there are a bunch of overloads as well. It supports dynamic. So if you don't want to declare your POCO, you can just get a dynamic back and work like Massive does.
Yep.
And if you want to have your POCO, then we support a method of multiple mappings, multi-mapping, I call it, which is where you can bring back multiple, you can bring back a hybrid object from your database. So you can left join into, you can select your orders and left join into your customers and then bring back the order and customer in the same go without having to go to the database twice. So that's what we use multi-mapping for.
This is what, effectively bringing back a tuple or something?
You have control. You can bring back a tuple, but the multi-mapping has a bunch of overloads, so you can bring back up to a tuple of six, and you can decide what the return type is as well. So you give it a mapping function that tells it how to map the row that you've got back from SQL to objects.
And so if we were doing order header, order lines, for instance, as the classic example of a, you know, one-to-many type relationship, you'd actually bring back the one order header object and then what the lines as a enumerable or a queryable or something?
With order, yeah, that's the opposite problem. It's a classic problem, but it's the opposite problem. And that you'd use a query multiple for that. So you'd run two queries. But if you want to run a single query, for example, you've got a product and each product has an owner.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd select star from products, left join into your users mm-hmm. on the owner ID equal to the user ID.
Yep.
And then you've got back these really fat rows that contain at the beginning of the row, there's the product.
Okay.
And at the other part of the row, there is the owner. And then this allows you to map that fat row into two objects.
Gotcha.
And shape
gotcha.
It the way you want it.
Nice. Nice.
And the beauty of this approach is that this is all like two lines of code to do it. You know, you just call .query and supply a bunch of parameters. You don't have to go and edit a bunch of configuration files. There's no configuration required. So this mixes in really well with other projects. If you just want to use part Dapper, you can.
So the SQL itself, you're just doing effectively a SQL query string, passing that in as a parameter for your queries. How does obviously things like SQL injections are concerned for a lot of people.
So yeah, so parameters are handled very, very elegantly in Dapper. There's an every all of the methods query, query multiple, etc., except a dynamic, which is the which is meant to be an anonymous type that has the parameters. So if, for example, you want to pass in order ID equals one,
mm-hmm.
you do new bracket order ID equal one, close bracket, and then we know how to convert that into a SQL parameter for you. So you'd enter the query. The SQL itself will contain the at order ID,
yep.
and then you'd tell Dapper these are my parameters, and it will know how to convert that into SQL parameters.
Okay, and if the type was wrong, if say our dev went, oh, you know what, let's put in, you know, new ID equals silly bugger
mm-hmm.
as a string, but the table only takes an int,
you'd get an error.
Okay, and you're not wrapping those errors in anything, they just get thrown as a standard SQL exception?
Yes, that's correct. There's very, very little wrapping of stuff in Dapper. It tries to stay as close to the bare metal as possible.
To get that speed. So have you found the take-up of this so far? Has a lot of people jumped on board and gone, ooh, cool, or are they doing more the ooh, new and shiny?
It is used in production in quite a few places at the moment.
Other than Stack Overflow?
Other than Stack Overflow. it's hard. It's a different... When we were sold all of the big fancy ORMs, it was like give up control, let all of the ORMs take care of all of your problems for you. And people have a lot of difficulty going, oh, yeah, I have to write SQL now. This SQL thing, I don't want to write that. So there is, you know, there is this fear that people have about writing SQL themselves. They don't trust themselves a lot of times. And they want the ORM to do it for them. But for the people that, I guess there are a lot of these old school devs that were handed all of these ORMs and said, you know, all nice and fancy, but I've lost control. People that are control freaks really love Dapper.
or those people who have no ability to control the SQL at all because they have to do everything through a stored proc.
That Dapper is pretty ideal for that, because what else do you need? You just need a mapper when you've got that.
Yeah, so there's IBATIS, for instance, does a similar sort of thing with stored procs where it's a lot of mapping and so forth, but there's a lot of config you have to set up for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've played with it at all, but it seems to be a bit more, you know, you configure it and it's obviously been around a while, so it's got some legacy to carry forward.
Dapper didn't take the approach of you need T4 templates and you need to run stuff on your DB to get everything to work. And it embraces a lot of .NET 4. It works on .NET 3.5 as well, but to get the best experience, you'd use .NET 4.
So if you're on .NET 3.5, you'd lose the dynamic stuff, for instance.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do there.
Yeah, so parameter parsing, what happens there?
Anonymous types are still supported in 3.5.
I thought you were saying that was a dynamic before.
It's a dynamic because there's a Visual Studio bug, which is a little bit annoying. But yeah, it could have been. So for 3.5, we switch it to object. But in Visual right. Studio, if you do new and then press space and the parameter is an object, then it will do new space object for you. So it makes it really annoying to type in parameters in Dapper. That's why I ended up having to pass it in as a dynamic.
Nice.
But yeah, there's a lot of that kind of thought went into Dapper of making the least friction that we could think of in the API, which I think paid off quite a lot, because when we use it ourselves, we're kind of, it just feels a lot more natural when nothing is getting in your way.
And do you then tie that to any profiling in there, or you do all the profiling of the SQL statements at the database side of things and you don't really worry about it on the client side?
Dapper itself has nothing to do, no special profiling things going on there.
Because it's just straight mapping and nothing to worry about.
Yeah, but when we do, for example, MVC Mini Profiler, it has a SQL profiler, which is very, very, very useful, because when you profile your database in SQL Profiler, you're unable to find what lines of code tie to the SQL. So if you see, you know, select one from customer where mm-hmm. blah, how do you know what line of code that came from? And it's pretty much impossible for you to know.
So this is a nice segue.
Yeah.
Well, the MVC Mini Profiler is what basically?
It's a production profiler, which means it's basically designed to work in production. So it impacts your project. It has a very, very low performance impact on the project.
Mm-hmm.
It provides you with an overview of your page's life cycle. Performance-wise, so it tells you what happened, how does the time break. If your page took 100 milliseconds to generate, it will help you break that 100 milliseconds down and account for it.
So how's this different to something like Glimpse, for instance?
Glimpse, there are a few things. Glimpse is not designed as a production tool. It's a tool that you use in development.
Right.
Glimpse is not focused on profiling. It has a bit of profiling going on, but it is not a profiling tool.
So it's more about tracing.
It's more about tracing and telling what is going on inside your MVC app.
Yep.
Whereas MVC Mini Profiler is all about profiling. And for example, at Stack Overflow, we're able to break down what it takes to render a question page down to like the millisecond and know what happened at every part of the request and why it took 60 milliseconds. And it allows us to see the SQL itself as well
mm-hmm.
that was used to render the page with stack traces of where that SQL came from. And you're able to set up little blocks, profiling blocks in your code that don't affect you during production if you're not profiling, but when profiling is on, which it is always on for developers, it will give you breakdown timing for the various parts of the page where you've put these profiling blocks. Additionally, we have an integration piece for ASP.NET MVC. The MVC Mini Profiler has a bit of a deceptive name because it works for ASP.NET as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which, the project needs a rename, but we haven't come up with a good name for it.
You need something that sounds very British, like Dapper and maybe Snappy or I don't know.
Snappy, yes. I think Jeff suggested Gonzalez, but I'm not sure that's going to fly.
Underlay.
Yeah. But the idea there is that we added an MVC integration piece as well that will tell you how long it took to render each view automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So once you wire all of this in, you get free profiling without having to change anything in your code. It'll tell you this view took X amount to render, and these partials took this long to render, and it took us this long to find each one of these partials, which is pretty interesting that if you don't put those tildes in front of your partials, then you're adding like 0.3 milliseconds of time to the page. But if you have 100 partials, it all adds up. So it gives you a good visibility of what it took to render the page. And having this ubiquitous production profiling around means that your developers are very aware of the performance profile as they're browsing through the site, and your testers are very aware of it as well. So imagine in a parallel universe where you're given a bug from a tester and he says, you know, this page is taking too long to render. And instead of just saying, because the partial that is, that table is missing an index, the quality of bug that you get back from your testers there is
much more
phenomenal.
Yeah.
And you can deal with it immediately. You don't need to work through your code and spend 3 weeks figuring out what it is.
So the profiling information is getting dumped to a table somewhere and then you're going back and looking at that table after the session, or how's it work from a looking at this information? So we're recording it and throwing it somewhere.
So, yeah, we record it and you can decide what your provider is for it. So there's we ship a SQL provider, so you can store it in SQL. Mm-hmm. Internally at Stack Overflow, we store it in Redis. And you can just store it in your HTTP cache as well, which is a provider that ships with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the page will render a little chunk of JavaScript on top when you have profiling on, which is only on for devs, of course, or testers, or whatever you decide.
So does that picks up based on the user or on debug mode, or you're setting a flag somewhere?
We set a flag. You can set the flag however you want to set the flag. You can also abandon profiling at any point in time as well. So there's
flicks it off for that session effectively, does it?
Yeah. So for example, at Stack Overflow, we enable profiling if you have a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in the request lifecycle, we figure out who you are. And if you're not a developer and you have that cookie, we'll abandon the results. So the cookie doesn't help. It's not for security. It's just for performance. Because
mm-hmm.
when you want to start profiling as early as possible, and as early as possible, you may not have access to the information about who the user is. It may come later in the page. So that's how we have the production profiling at Stack Overflow. When I browse Stack Overflow, I've got this little, I think people like to call it chiclet, but there's this little number at my top right-hand side that says how long it took to render the page. And that I've had for months and months. I wouldn't be able to visit the site. And it also handles AJAX. So back to how it works, it renders a little JavaScript include. When we grab that JavaScript include, that will poll the server to ask it about new things that happen, new profiling events, and then mm-hmm. it'll pull that information from the Redis cache or HTTP cache or whatever and render those chiclets. So this works as well with AJAX calls. If you've got a page that performs 20 AJAX calls, you'll get 20 numbers on the right-hand side that'll say how long it took to run any of those AJAX calls. It also works with post. So if you post something, it's able to pick up all the history for that user and history that the user didn't see and display on the site as well. So it's very, very comprehensive.
Excellent, excellent. All right. So if people want to have a look at both of those, we'll have links for them in the show note, but MVC Mini Profile, dapper.net, just Google for it, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Now, one other thing we did want to talk about was an event coming up in Sydney soon.
Yes.
Which is ...
Dev Days. I'll just get these dates. 1 second. Can you edit this?
Clunk, clunk, crash, rustling of paper, insert sound of tumbleweed.
Excellent.
Elevator music. I might need to get some elevator music for us.
Yeah, that'll work. Well, here's the link for Dev Day Sydney, which is an exciting...
okay, so for those who didn't see it pop up on Skype, then the link is devdays.stackoverflow.com something or other. Hang on, where's the rest of it? /Sydney. Awesome. Yeah.
Excellent. devdays.stackoverflow.com. That's on October the 25th and 26th. We're going to have some really, really cool speakers, like Rob Connery is coming down from Hawaii.
Is he now?
He is.
He's not a very opinionated young man.
Oh, he is very, very unopinionated. We've got Dmitry Baranovsky, who is the author of Rafael.js, doing a brutal JavaScript talk, which is going to be very, very exciting. A few people from Atlassian doing talks on continuous delivery.
Excellent.
And CSS in the post-IE6 world. And a few other talks that haven't been announced yet. I'll be doing a talk on performance and scalability. There'll be a talk on Cassandra. So as you can see, the type of the talks, it's very, very cross-disciplinary. It's not going to be just one technology specific. The idea is that you'll be able to go to the conference and learn a few new technologies and come back with skills that you can apply.
Excellent, excellent. And so that's going to be held in where are you at?
Where is it? It's at the
Homebush?
Homebush, Badgery Pavilion.
Very good, very good. All right. So registration's obviously on that link.
Yes, it is.
We'll turn up, have a great day. And it's a one-day event?
It's a two-day event.
Two-day.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, and I didn't mention Joel's going to be there as well, so he'll be talking.
He's also not very opinionated.
No. So we've just got a whole bunch of unopinionated people.
some shrinking violets.
Yeah. So, yeah, Node.js, a whole bunch of other stuff.
Oh, okay, Lachlan's there, Lachlan Hardy. I see that. I'm just having a quick peek at the moment.
Yeah.
Got some good people coming.
Craig's coming as well to talk about mobile, so that'll be cool.
Oh, plenty of people, so it'll be great to get along to. All right, we might call it quits there. Is there anything else you want to plug while you're on the air?
Not much. Just have a great time. If you feel like contributing to the projects, we accept patches. So
perfect.
People need to know that. It's not closed source. We're throwing the code out there and accepting contributions all the time from the community.
Excellent.
If you have questions about any of them, you can ask them on Stack Overflow. I'm constantly watching
Strangely enough.
Yeah. I'm constantly watching the Dapper
so
tag.
So you didn't set up a Google group or something for it?
I don't think so.
Cool. All right. We'll call it quits there. Thanks again, okay. Sam, for coming on the show.
No worries.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been another episode of Talking Shop Down Under, and we will catch you on the next episode. Until then, happy coding. See you guys later.
Visit talkingshopdownunder.com for previous shows or to subscribe to the feed. Your feedback is always very much appreciated, so get in touch and let us know what you're thinking. Reviews can be left on iTunes or the Zoom Marketplace. Email can be sent to mail@talkingshopdownunder.com and tweets to @talking_shop. That's it for now. Show's over. Go home, people. Go home.